Hello, I am Justin Peters, and welcome to Disturbed. Today, I'm alone again. I just realized I have to... Oh, my phone's on silent, good, but I also have to charge it. So, I'm going to try and put in my charger without messing all this up. Alright. My phone is my microphone, if you can't tell. If you also can't tell, I have kind of a cold. My sinuses are messed up, my nose has stopped. But I was listening to podcasts and struck with random inspiration because I have been actually doing research. I know, crazy. And I decided I would do an episode covering this research. I kind of written stuff down in of news articles and different ways of a specific story that I'm going to share with you guys today, which is a story. This one stuck with me. I saw, like, a video about it on YouTube, and it really stuck with me. A little tidbit about myself. I have slight claustrophobia. Not bad, but if I cannot move, I get very panicky very fast. And this story that I'm going to talk of today is one that would be officially my nightmare of nightmares. Very disturbing in regards of my own fears and my own phobias. So, today we're talking about the death of John Edward Jones and the closure of Nutty Putty Cave in Utah. So, here's where the sauce... Here, let's do some non-linear storytelling here. Susie Mottola. She works at a rescue company in Utah. She works in the rescues. She does the rescues in Utah. And 12:30 in the morning on November 25th of 12:30 a.m. November 25th, 2009, Susie Mottola is inside a cave known as Nutty Putty Cave. Nutty Putty Cave is notorious for this kind of brown, peanut butter-colored putty, this kind of clay, which is what it's named after, and it's only found in this cave because the humidity inside that cave is the only way that this clay could be formed, the only way this moisture could build up and make this clay. So it kind of got known for it being this clay-filled cave, which is why it's called Nutty Putty Cave. Now, this cave is also notorious for another thing. Being tight. Being tight enough that a young boy, 5 years prior to this event, November 25th, 2009, this was in 2004, a boy of only 140 pounds, 5'7", got stuck on their way to find this location known as, known as... We don't edit on this podcast, by the way. On their way to find the birth canal. That's what it's called. The birth canal, which is obviously named after the birth canal. Because it is such a tight squeeze, it's meant to, it feels like it's you're being born. But he didn't find the birth canal. He found this area known as Ed's Push, and I'll get more onto that. But Susie Mottola finds herself on her way down to Ed's Push in 12:30 in the morning on November 25th, 2009. She reaches Ed's Push, and what she sees is not a nice sight. She sees a small hole in the ground that is plugged. What's plugging this hole? At first, you can't really make it out. But you can see that this plug has things, two long things poking out of it. Those two long things are legs. And this plug is a man by the name of John Edward Jones. How did he get to become inverted in this horrifically small place? Such a small place that someone who was a little boy who was 140 pounds and only 5'7" could get stuck in. How did he find himself here? Well, that's what I'm about to tell you. John Edward Jones, first, before I tell you how he got there, let's give an overview of his life to get him to, you know, his unsightly demise. John Edward Jones is a 26-year-old med student as of November 24th, 2009. He lives in Virginia, but he is returning home to Utah for the holidays. John and his father and his brother Josh had always been cave diving, had always loved cave diving. His father loved nature, and he did. His father worked for the Utah Cave Rescue. He started it, actually. His father started the Utah Cave Rescue, and John even volunteered for it all the time. But at this point, he hadn't been caving in I don't know how long. He didn't know how long. But on November 24th, 2009, at 8 p.m., him, his brother Josh, and 9 other friends or family members enter this cave. John, in some way or another, someone had convinced him to go, even though he didn't really want to. He was, I think I have it here, he was like, let's see. He is 6 foot tall and 200 pounds. He was married, had a 1-year-old daughter, and was attending medical school in Virginia and was expecting a son. His wife was pregnant at the time. He hadn't been in a cave for years. But he is convinced. Someone convinces him that it would be a fun night to go caving again. After all these years. So he picks up this old rainbow, I think, yeah, rainbow colored headband, headlight that he hadn't used since he was a kid. And him, his brother Josh, and 9 other friends slash family members enter Nutty Putty Cave on November 24th, 2009 at 8 p.m. before the holidays. Now, here's a little bit on his brother Josh. He is 23 years old. And like his brother John, he's a Mormon. Now, of course, that doesn't really matter until in, like, a few points where it's like, how do they deal with such a tragedy? They're both Mormon. I think their whole family is Mormon. So, about an hour in, John decides to find the formation that I have talked about, known as the birth canal. It is notorious for being small and simulating being born. It is a very tight squeeze, like most people's birth canals. And he crawls into a small tunnel, and at the end finds a hole which he believes is the birth canal, which is 10 inches across by 8 inches high. I don't have the centimeters for that, but imagine this: imagine a dryer, like a clothes dryer. The opening to one of those, that is around the size we're talking about here. And he thinks this is, he thinks he had been down the birth canal, but he realizes that he has taken a wrong turn. But you see, he was already in a small tunnel at the time. Before he sees this hole, there is no way for him to turn around in any way. And you don't want to back out of that. I've seen, on researching this, I saw a map of it, and it looks like it goes up. Like, it goes up. It's very hard to traverse backwards. It's very hard to traverse forwards, much less backwards. So he realizes the only way to get down and to turn around and get back up and reconvene with his family is to go down this small hole that is 10 inches across by 8 inches high. Again, imagine the size of a dryer's opening. And he goes down head first. And he finds himself kind of stuck. He slips down because he is going down at almost vertical 90 degree angle. And he goes down head first. And he slips down and gets stuck. He can't go further. And he can't pick himself up. But he sees at the bottom, there's this little clearing. He sees that the rock doesn't just end. It opens up to a clearing of some kind. And he thinks, I can get down there. I can turn around and I can get back up if I just get down there. So he sucks in his chest, lets all the breath out of his lungs, and he slips down farther. But then, when he has to take a breath again, his chest expands and it lodges him in the rock. It lodges him deep in this hole, with only his calves sticking out of the top. John cries for help, obviously, and Josh finds the birth canal, and they're like, they find whatever, and they realize something's wrong, so they try looking around, and they finally find the way to where John is, which is known as Ed's Push, where 5 years earlier, a young boy of 140 pounds, 5'7", got stuck in. He was able to get out. But Josh isn't so lucky. I mean, John. Sorry. John isn't so lucky. Josh is the first to find him. His brother Josh is the first to find him. He tried pulling at John's calves, but only ended up making him slip farther down. His arms were pinned. One was stuck upwards towards his feet by his side, the other pressed against his chest. He couldn't move at all. They prayed and they sang Mormon hymns, namely one known as How Firm a Foundation. There is a great episode to another podcast called Where is the Line? They talk about this, and Kevin on Where is the Line does great research. And if you want to know more about this that even I haven't talked about, go check out that podcast. That's where I found out that they sang How Firm a Foundation. And when he talks about that, he also plays a clip from the song if you want to hear it and not have to look for it yourself. They prayed until John told Josh to leave him and get help. But he, of course, he doesn't. He leaves a friend with him, and he goes to get help. But it takes an hour for the rescue team to get to him, not including the time it takes to get to the cave itself. He goes to get help at 9:30. Skip ahead to 12:30, and that is when Susie Mottola finds John. These rescuers work for 24 hours, and they set up this system of pulleys in the cave wall to help him out. Now, this tunnel that he had been stuck in, I'm gonna have to drill it into the listeners' heads here, but this tunnel was already small before he went and got stuck. And they tried just taking a rope and tying it to his legs and pulling, but there was too much friction throughout the cave to even make it budge, so they get these system of pulleys. But there's also, A, there's no room to get any heavy machinery down there to speed it up. B, they're having to go at this with manual hammers, and they're not even able to get a full strike in, because there's no room to bring back your arm for a full hammer strike. And C, John is upside down, and he's losing time fast. I will go to the effects of being inverted for a long time in a second. But John is upside down, and he is losing time. Time that they do not have. No, that's a weird way to phrase that. They need time, and because John is losing it, that is time they do not have. Now, here is the thing. Here's what happens if you are inverted for a long time. At first, it starts with suffocation. It gets hard to breathe. Because your organs are meant to support the lungs, which rest on top. As you know, the basic human body, like, you have your heart in the middle, and around that is the lungs, and the lungs sit on the intestinals, and the stomach, and the kidneys, and all that. Because the kidneys, and the stomach, and the intestines can deal with the weight of the lungs, not the other way around. But when you're inverted for long periods of time, your lungs are forced to deal with that. And that leads to shortness of breath, inability to draw breath. And because we have adapted to being upright, we have systems in place in our legs that gets blood from the feet up to the brain. Kind of like pumps that pump blood powerfully, more powerfully in our legs, because we adapted to using our legs and having our legs be inverted and blood pooling in our legs. But when inverted, the blood doesn't pool in the legs. The blood pools in the brain. And our brain does not have a system like that. Our brain does not have any kind of pump to get blood out of it, because your brain's like, hey, we didn't have to endure that. We didn't have to evolve for that. Because we're not sitting here doing handstands for 50 hours a day. We're not walking on our hands inverted. So we don't need it. But that means if we are inverted for long periods of time, blood pools in the brain and blood vessels start to burst, and you start giving hemorrhaging in the brain and pressure on the brain from the pooling of blood, which leads to brain damage, confusion, that and lack of oxygen to the brain from suffocating also causes brain damage. And you start to lose a sense of self. You start to go crazy. You start to forget things. You start to have symptoms of, like, dementia, in a way to simplify it. And soon, the heart gets overwhelmed. It starts working harder to try and pump blood, because all the blood it's pumping is pooling in the brain and not getting back to it. And it's working harder and harder to try and get blood through it, even though it's working against the pull of gravity, instead of with it, like our veins and our cardial system, I think is what it's called. Our veins and our heart are meant to work with gravity, not fight against it. And because of this, the heart gets overwhelmed. Blood starts filling up in the heart. Blood pressure drops, and the heart has a hard time getting blood to the outer extremities, which leads to feelings of numbness, like intense, your foot fell asleep. Like, make your foot fall asleep, times that by 100, because your foot is literally not getting oxygen and is slowly dying. Because it's not getting blood flow. Now, I also want to, after this, I want to preface the fact that John Jones was a medical student in Virginia. He knew everything that would happen to him. He didn't come into it ignorantly. He didn't die ignorantly. Until he had so much brain damage and junk like that that he was confused out of his mind, he knew exactly what was going on because he had studied it. In the afternoon, November 25th, rescuers managed to get him loose. Giving him an IV, food and drink, and a police radio to talk with his wife. Only a few hours later, this completely went out the window. You see, like I said before, the rescuers tied John to a system of pulleys. They pulled using these pulleys, and they got him loose, like I said, but one of the pulleys failed. Coming loose and being pulled from the cave wall it was attached to. Someone gets hit directly in the head by it. But they don't lose hope. They set it up again. And they tie it around his legs, and they set him up again, and they pull him up. But the cave ceiling is in the way. They pull him up, and his feet touch the cave ceiling, and he starts screeching. Screaming. John goes absolutely berserk. Why? Because there was no blood flow to his feet, which caused them to be extremely, extremely sensitive to touch. And they banged his feet on this cave ceiling, and he starts screeching, screaming, and howling in pain. And that's when the rescuers come to realize that there is no way of getting him out without breaking his legs. During all this, his wife was talking to him via police radio. She gets to the site to see him so that she can, you know, hold her husband when he gets out of the situation. And she sees an officer at this site, and that officer promises her that we will get him out. The only thing is, that officer immediately started sobbing. I know this is the point in the story when you guys probably expect me to say what happened was they had to slowly break his legs, but he got out of it alive. And he's just in a wheelchair now, talking about this story and saying how it changed his life and doing TED Talks. But sadly, I cannot say that. Because his body was under such strain that the shock of a broken leg would kill him. He would pass out due to blood loss, and he would never wake up. That, and because of such prolonged inverted, like, being inverted for so long, because of being inverted for so long, toxins were being pooled in his blood that normally the heart takes care of. These toxins in the bloodstream are in us all the time, but the heart pumps more and more blood and it gets cleansed, and it's either taken out with our sweat or breathed out, but his heart cannot pump blood. His heart cannot pump blood as efficiently, and toxins are pooling in the blood that is pooling in his head. And that, and the strain of such a sudden just shift in blood of him not being inverted anymore, would cause him to go into cardiac arrest. John starts talking nonsense, asking why he's here, telling the people trying to help him to get him out, why did you put him here? Asking, why did you put me here? Why am I here? Why am I on my head? Why am I inverted? What's going on? I have no clue. Please tell me. I want to see my wife. My wife's talking to me. I can't see her. Where is she? All of these things. And over the course of 28 hours of after the course of 28 hours of failing and failing and failing to get this man out of this stupid hole in Utah, in Stansbury Park, Utah, slightly after midnight, with his wife on the radio telling him to keep strong, that they will carry on, that they will be able to get through this, slightly after midnight, on November 26th of 2009, John Edward Jones becomes unresponsive. And he doesn't respond again. And I wish I could say that was the end. We're close to the end, but that's not the end. Because that's not the worst thing. You would hope that in that situation, they would at least be able to perform a proper body retrieval and have a proper burial. But they tried, and they couldn't. So to this day, if you visit Stansbury Park, Utah, and visit the mountain where Nutty Putty Cave was, you will not find a cave. You will find a hole in the ground where that cave once was, and in that hole in the ground, to this very day, is a placard. A placard stating that John Edward Jones, accompanied by his wife and what was to be two children, had died November 25th of 2009, and now you're probably thinking, well, they probably closed the cave down and memorialized him because the cave is too dangerous. Partly, yes, that cave is very dangerous, and that's partly why they closed it. But another reason is because that cave remains still to this day the final resting place of John Edward Jones. Due to no proper body retrieval, the only proper burial they could give is sealing that cave off from the outside out, from the outside world, and calling it a grave. So to this day, the now, let's see, he was 26 in 2009, it is 2022 now. So, let's see, that is 13 years, and add that to 26, the 38 to 40 year old body of John Edward Jones still remains inverted in Nutty Putty Cave in the Ed's Push section. That cave is to never be opened again, as far as I know. And there has been no proper attempt at retrieval of John Edward Jones's body. And to this day, you can visit the cave. I'm giving you the... It's like on a mountain, it's on like a hill in Stansbury Park, Utah. Still to this day, you can visit it, but you could never go inside because it is sealed up for good. And it is the final resting place of John Edward Jones. So, that is my story today. It's a pretty messed up one. It's one that stuck with me. This and the story that I'm going to be researching later, which I'm not going to spoil. John Edward Jones' wife. I'm going to end with this. John Edward Jones' wife. wife, John Edward Jones's wife, has come forth to say that she has found peace, that she has found solace in the idea that she will soon see her John again whenever she passes, and that God had intended John to have left in that way as a way to make her life and his life both better. And she believes that God's will is God's will, and that even though she grieves, that she will soon be reunited with her John again. So that will be it for this episode of Disturbed. I hope you have enjoyed it. If you have, please give us a like and subscribe. Like if you cried, haha, me too. No, but it does sincerely help, and it helps me know that this content you guys enjoy. So definitely, I'm not asking for money. I don't get really monetization with this, and I don't really want it. But if you could subscribe and like and help it get to other people so that my words could get out there, that would be amazing. I'm just some 16-year-old nobody in my room with my phone talking to future people. But those future people can subscribe and can like and can share it and can tell their friends to listen to my podcast and then get my word out there, which seems crazy to me that such a 16-year-old nobody in Bucktooth County, Tennessee can have his word spread to the world. So that's a little bit of an incentive to subscribe, I guess. But I've been this has been Disturbed. My name is Justin Peters, and I am signing out. Goodbye.